Well, howdy there, folks. You tired of centralized nonsense telling you what's money and what ain't? You tired of the shitcoiners getting your way of ushering in hyper-Bitcoinization? Come on down to Trinkets for Plebs, where decentralization ain't just a buzzword. It's a lifestyle. Now, I can't tell you that these trinkets do much, but I can tell you they shine brighter than fiat promises, and they're built tougher than a shit poster in a bear market. You like freedom? You like sound money? You like things that make your in-laws nervous at Thanksgiving? Then, brother, you need yourself a pleb trinket. These little beauties whisper one truth and one truth only. Bitcoin is money. Say it with me now. Bitcoin is money. And, folks, I ain't talking about some fancy Wall Street ETF nonsense. No, sir. I'm talking peer-to-peer, open source. Source borderless magic internet hard money trinkets. Don't ask how it works. Just know the plebs are stacking them. The bona fide, glorified, purity test certified trinkets are running out faster than block space when Udi has VC money. So bring your sats, your hash power, and your best buddy Jim, the one who still thinks Dogecoin's a retirement plan. And come on down to Trinkets for Plebs, where we don't sell dreams, we mine them. Trinkets for Plebs. Decentralization you can hold in your hand.
Seriously, who the fuck thought it was a good idea to take a sponsorship from Trinkets with Plebs? I'm getting so tired of all the fucking pleb slop stuff, guys. I just don't want to hear about it anymore. I don't fucking care. Yes, it's there, and we all have to see it every single day. But you need to stop talking about it. It's become a problem, an addiction. You are addicted to calling out pleb slop. Why can't you just be addicted to things like normal people are? Just do some cocaine, get really drunk, and screw some hookers. There's some cute ones out there if you hang around Michael Saylor. Quit tearing down the heroes of the plebs and exposing them for spewing worthless pleb slop. I don't care if this is the biggest story of the century. Just fucking cut it out, you maniacs. Anyways, even if you keep on going, I'll still love you guys. This is Kaylee Welch, and you are listening to The Bugle Weekly.
All right, folks. We're going to try something a little bit different for this episode. Ron and I are going to give our opinions. We're about a year in from the greatest selection of our lifetimes. When Donald Trump was selected for president of the United States, and it was a big moment. It was a big moment in Bitcoin's history. It was a big moment in Solana meme coins history. And it's been a wild year. It's been a very wild year. It doesn't feel like it's been a year. It feels a lot longer. The news cycle has been intense because we're in the fourth turning. And in the fourth turning, it's the best time to be a journalist. Because you get to report on things that are actually consequential instead of, typically what journalists do outside of the fourth turning is they make big deals out of things that aren't that important. But every day you get to look at what's happening around you in the world and, point to things that actually matter, which is, why I find it kind of strange that there's so much pleb slop, because it's unnecessary. You can just talk about things that are interesting that are happening, but we're not going to talk about pleb slop that much in this episode, I don't think. I don't know what Rod's got in store, but I'm not planning on it. To be honest, I've been both impressed and disappointed with the Trump presidency so far. His memes have been savage. His memes have been absolutely savage. He has, really eviscerated the left. Like the Nazis can't meme, the left can't meme as well. And the memes have been really crazy. But he's going through some of... I think it's helpful to reflect on things from time to time, because when you're in the fourth turning, when you're in these crazy news cycles, it's so easy to forget what just happened. And this is something that, journalists and the media are very effective at, is they're very effective at just bombarding people so that they forget what happened previously. But yeah, let's go through some of Donald Trump's campaign promises. So number one was immigration. He has really stuck to that one. He has been so hard on that one. There have been civil unrest over it. It's been very jarring for a lot of people. I'm asked to do some large tax cuts, and I'm not sure if taxes have really gotten that much affordable. He promised to make energy less expensive and to end inflation and make America affordable again. I don't think Americans right now are feeling like its taxes are more affordable. I don't think they're feeling like energy is more affordable. Gas has stayed relatively flat over the past year. It came down going into this election. I don't think inflation has ended. It's kind of a, you know, when you hear a politician at this point of the economic cycle promise to end inflation, you know that they're lying, because you've listened to Lynn Alden. You know that Lynn Alden's hot and that she's telling the truth when nothing stops this train. And I don't think the train has been slashed on that, but yeah, energy prices have been going up across the board. And I think it's just because the plebs are deploying so many bid acts and start 9 servers. Like, the capacity is just unreal. These guys are deploying these knots nodes. And so it kind of counteracts, like, the pleb trinkets being deployed are counteracting any sort of drop in energy prices due to slashing of regulations. I think it's too early to conclusively say he's failed on that. It's just, I don't know, you know, this might be this thing where energy prices can't get cheaper, because you think as we hyper-Bitcoinize, there's going to be more and more pleb trinkets deployed. I think that's a safe assumption. Like, you know, the future of hyper-Bitcoinization is a pleb trinket in every home, or multiple pleb trinkets. So I think that's like a bad campaign promise, that, you know, you kind of have something working against you and the power of the plebs deploying trinkets. Promise to bring manufacturing back to the United States. And I just don't think the robots have been deployed quick enough to replace the illegal immigrants. So we'll probably have to give them another couple of years, but they're working on those robots pretty quick. I think he promised no new wars. We've gotten a few new wars, but I'm just going to go over the surface level ones. But the country has changed a lot in the last year, and the attitude has changed a lot. I spend my time with Bitcoin podcasters. For the most part, I hang out with Bitcoin podcasters, and I hang out with the pioneers. And what I see for the pioneers is all their lives are getting better. And the reason why their lives are getting better is not because of everything around them, but because of the things they're doing for themselves, despite the things happening around them. But when I look at the plebs, their lives are dramatically getting worse. And I wouldn't blame Trump for that. I think that's just the consequences of tolerating plebs law for so long, tolerating the nonsense, the building your worldview, building your decisions, the way that you form opinions and make decisions, on top of nonsense, on top of slop. And there's consequences coming around for that. It works in the first, second, and third turning, but it sure as hell doesn't work in the fourth. The bill comes due, and the bill is due. And so the plebs are having a hard time. They're having a really hard time. A lot of plebs out there, they're feeling a sense of hopelessness. They're feeling a sense of, like, things are out of control. You look at the political PodConf ecosystem. They're talking about civil war. You talk to people outside of the United States, and they're asking what the civil war is like. The news that they're consuming saying that it's already happening. And in a lot of ways it is, but it's just not very clear what the sides are. You got the boomers standing in the streets. yelling no kings. But that's kind of hard to point at and say it's a definitive civil war. Because the boomers aren't going to fight for anything at this point. They're too old. They're going to go back home and, cash their Social Security checks so they can go out to the casino. Their fight's over. But we're watching globally. I mean, it's been really interesting. The Zoomers are overthrowing governments all around the world. The broccoli haircuts, they're storming their government buildings. They're spanking the politicians. We have yet to see that type of anger really foment in the U.S. to that extent. And I don't know if it's coming. It might come. But yeah, for the plebs, we're going into the holiday season. And things are going to be really hard for the plebs. They're going to be asking themselves, should they buy their family Christmas presents or should they save to be able to afford their taxes? They're going to be, having to make some hard financial decisions. And this has been ongoing for some time, but it seems like it's accelerating. And it's accelerating fast. And there's this looming trade war. Well, it's not looming. It's been ongoing, but it's kind of hanging over right now with some tensions between the U.S. and China. If that really heats up right now or doesn't get resolved really quick this week, Christmas could be pretty painful for some people. Thanksgiving could be pretty painful for some people. But the biggest change, I think, is just there's a sense of uncertainty. And the plebs do not like uncertainty. They like stability. They like, it is part of the reason why they get sucked into these constructs like government. And, they're looking around. They were at the conference in Nashville. They were so excited about Trump saying, have fun playing with your Bitcoins. And the price hasn't gone up to the extent that they wanted it to. The price hasn't been exciting. And all they've gotten is podcasters telling them that Bitcoin's broken. The price hasn't gone up. Luke's out there saying that Bitcoin's weaker than ever. Their situation is significantly harder right now. And they're upset. They're grumpy. They were watching Simply Bitcoin videos and they were told that what amount of Bitcoin they needed to be able to retire. And they acquire that amount of Bitcoin and they can barely afford to pay their taxes. That's their situation right now. And they're wondering if they're ever going to be able to retire, if they're ever going to be able to buy a house, if they're ever going to be able to, get to the point where they're actually able to do anything that they want to do. And, it's fascinating to watch. I think the biggest thing that has been, really fascinating for me to watch over the past year is the complete divergence between the experience the plebs are having and the pioneers. The individuals that are taking ownership for themselves, their minds, their lives, the success that they're having, the, creative adventures that they're going on. People starting families, people having kids, people doing some really, really cool building businesses. There's a lot of opportunity out there, even though, things are chaotic. And I think a huge part of it is a mindset. Plebs want stability. They want to be ruled. They want to be given things without a lot of effort. That's why they like slop, is because it doesn't take a lot of effort to consume. It doesn't take a lot of thought. And just look at it, feel good about themselves. Wow, I'm so informed. I'm on the right side of things. Whatever it is. Like that's the instant gratification of consuming slop is feeling like I'm already failing not to talk about it. I guess Kaylee was right, and I am completely addicted to plump slop at this point. But there's an instant gratification of consuming it, of this confirmation bias of I'm on the right team. I'm on the right side of history. And what, you know, there's been this severe conditioning, at least in the United States, it's probably global, or at least, you know, largely in the Western United States, around the Allied forces being victorious in World War II and being on the right side of history. I don't know what it'd be like to grow up in Japan. Like, what is the storytelling there? They were on the wrong side of history, like, never repeat it. What's like to be in Germany, just completely emasculated as a population? You're on the wrong side of history. Never again. But in the West, outside of those countries, we're told we're on the right side of history. And democracy, freedom. And, you know, that's what the plebs want. They want to feel that way. But, the thing is, in times of tribulation, in times of difficulties, being on the right side of the history tends to mean that you do the hard thing. And the plebs will never do the hard thing. I don't know if it's an unwillingness or an incapability, but I guess it depends on the individual and the decisions that they make in the personality. Some people are just incapable of ever being sentient, but I think a lot of them make the decision not to. They weigh out their options and they're like, we're going to choose the safety of the crowd. We will sacrifice our children to Moloch instead of doing the correct thing and protecting our children. And it's going to be tough for them, because there's not that safety. And they're going to have to live with the consequences of their decisions. Like, I just don't feel like where we're at and where we're going, there's going to be the same level of safety net where you can make really bad decisions. I'm seeing a lot of people post about, you know, various cancers, and, you know, I have friends that are impacted by this, you know, various health issues, you know, young, healthy people. And I'm wondering, it's like one of those things that's impossible to determine, you know, the causation of sometimes, but I wonder if it's been impacted or accelerated because of the vaccine. And that was a test. That was a test that a lot of people failed. A lot of really intelligent people failed. It was a hard test. A lot of people faced a lot of extreme social pressures. But there's going to be a lot of tests like that going forward. We're being subjected to these types of tests on a daily basis. You know, these decisions of either setting yourself up for success or just completely neutering your ability to thrive in the future. And I don't think it's ever been more important to use your brain. Never been more important to use your Bitcoin or to listen to Bitcoin podcasts. It's never been more important to smoke cigarettes. It's really never been more important to really like trust yourself and trust your gut and, you know, believe in yourself. Because I think part of making good decisions is really believing in yourself, like really putting your time into investing in yourself, investing in your relationships, building yourself out, being around other people that build you up. I'm going to play an ad from the selection special, because I think these things, like going, I said this earlier, but, you know, going back and remembering, you know, the feelings and emotions that were happening at the time is important. You know, remembering the topics that were being debated, because it's so easy to forget. And when you forget about how quickly things change, how upset the plebs were at the time. You know, the grandstand, they're ready to, you know, throw down. You know, there were people protesting, you know, pretty violently in some cases, like leading up to the election, about things like abortion. When you forget about those things, it you forget the context needed to be able to make good, accurate decisions in the moment. Because the same exact tools of manipulation are being used over and over again. But here's the ad.
On November 5th, a Bitcoiner will be selected into the White House. Both candidates, Kamala Harris and Adolf Hitler, have embraced Bitcoin and crypto, making this the most important selection in our nation's history. While it's not public who you vote for, it sure is public if you voted or not. That way, boomers who deeply care about our democracy can harass and shame you for not voting. Remember, if you vote, you have no right to complain because you are helping to select non-compliant criminals into office. But voting is our sacred duty. Our generation's grandfathers stormed the beaches of Normandy in order to save the Jews from the Holocaust, so the nation of Israel could be founded in order for your tax dollars to go towards funding the Iron Dome. Voting is your sacred duty because you exist only for two reasons. You exist to vote in order to give legitimacy to government, and two, to generate tax dollars for government to export democracy to places that don't want it. Savages living peacefully around the world need to be conquered in order to serve U.S. corporations and to enlighten them to the wonders of gender and democracy. You can see why this election is so high stakes and requires you to participate in it. Both candidates have made so many promises to do so many great things for you. Both have promised to print a lot of money in order to make Bitcoin go up. Both have promised to make things cheaper while at the same time make taxes affordable. Fortunately, both candidates feel strongly about using million-dollar missiles to shoot down $1,000 missiles. But you can only vote for one of them, and the choice is yours. This is the most important selection in the history of the world. That is until Dennis Porter runs in 2028. Make sure to get to the polls to vote in person. But if you can't, follow Ted Kaczynski's advice.
The clip got cut off, but it ends by saying, vote by mail.
So yeah, I mean, one of the things about Donald Trump is many people were excited about him being a Bitcoin. Dave Bailey gave him that Cassius coin or whatever it's called. And he was the first president, at least that I'm aware of, that, you know, was ever self-custodying Bitcoin. Because when David handed him that coin, that was self-custody, which was, you know, a very brilliant marketing scheme by David. Very brilliant. He was the first president to go to PubKey and have a failed Lightning transaction. He was the first president to, you know, talk fondly about Bitcoin, to posture on it. What did he do? He launched a meme coin on Solana, and then he sued people that criticized him for it. Should it be surprising? I don't find it surprising. You know, we're all shitcoiners in the eyes of the Lord. But you kind of have to expect politicians to be shitcoiners, because they're fiat, and shitcoins are fiat. This is where a lot of Bitcoin people fail to see. They kind of classify shitcoins as if it's like this entirely different, it's like an entirely different category. But it's not. It's the same as fiat. It's literally the same. What is Bitcoin the representation of? Well, it's going to be different for a lot of different people. But I think what is exciting about Bitcoin is your inability to manipulate and control it. There's like a set. There's something set to it. Like I know when I go and I buy cigarettes and I do an on-chain transaction, because I don't do these little Lightning cigarette transactions. I buy a lot of cigarettes at once. I have a lot of cigarettes to buy. Do an on-chain transaction. I know that a pool's going to mine it. It's not going to be censored. My transaction is not going to be reversed. And there's really not a lot of review process. It's not like there's eyeballs on it where the pool is evaluating the transaction and whether they're going to take it or not, whether they deem my transaction worthy. And that's kind of, that's really cool. And I feel like what's strange right now about this environment that we're in the discourse is like, there's some questioning of that. You know, should the pools or should different individuals have a review process over my transaction for cigarettes or you know, whatever the transaction is? And I know that is upsetting. This is going to be upsetting, you know, the Nazi plebs. I don't really care. But it's just it's a very different dynamic that has entered the mix of, you know, suggesting that that should be questioned. And I think it's an interesting precedent. Like, this is, you know, the fiat world, the political world has changed dramatically. Trump came in, he completely eviscerated the left, completely. They're in total disarray. Nobody likes them. Nobody liked them in the first place, but they were powerful before. And these individuals that had all the power, they had control of all the institutions, and they had, in many ways, they had control of all the culture, lost it. It was a radical change within a year. Has it really yielded anything different? Well, we're still ruled by the Epstein list. And that was pretty clear. The wars are still going on. The printing is still going on. The taxes are still going on. There's been some superficial changes. Less of an emphasis on transgender bathrooms. The culture war has changed a lot. You can say gay and retard now. Pretty close to being able to say the N-word. Hear people saying it all the time, but they're not saying it publicly yet. Maybe in a couple of years. Probably coming. White people are going to get their N-word privileges. Like, that's one of the impacts of fascism, is that white people can say the N-word on podcasts and on Twitter. Some people are already, but not very many are brave enough yet. But the Bitcoin ecosystem has changed quite a bit. Quite a bit. And I think it will continue to change. I mean, we've seen this rise of stablecoin, and we're going to continue to see this rise of stablecoins. Where it's, you know, Bitcoin and Tether have become this giant geopolitical chess game. Like, it's the forefront of the geopolitical monetary warfare that's going on. You got Scott Bessent shilling Bitcoin. Pretty weird. But at the same time, you know, there's, you know, it's hard to say what's real, because you've seen this posturing of Donald Trump and, you know, these other people saying that they're ending Operation Choke Point 2.0, that they're being friendlier towards crypto businesses. But then you also see the developers getting prosecuted. And in the Bitcoin ecosystem, you see a lot of people, you know, talking about how the state's going to come in and regulate the way that you operate a Bitcoin node, unless you change. You got to out-comply the state before they come and regulate you. And whether that's just, you know, kind of like, those are vapid arguments that are never going to come to fruition, or if they're real, it's a massive change in discussion and conversation that wasn't being had before. And some people might, you know, explain that as Bitcoin Core making changes. But I don't know. I mean, maybe this is part of living in fascist America. Like, we could have had a complete retard running things, and people wouldn't have been as upset at the core devs for being woke and gay. That's kind of an interesting thing to think about, just from like a cultural standpoint. But the Overton window has shifted, and the Nazi plebs are not putting up with gay and woke core devs at all. It's just interesting. It's interesting to see these tides culturally, the way that they shift, the way that they change. I think a lot of the plebs, you know, their opinion, they get these firmware updates. And in many ways, the selection cycles are firmware updates for the plebs. And I think, you know, the political system in the United States, and I imagine this is very similar in other parts of the world, because, you know, democracy and these two-party systems, which a lot of countries have, are so effective at channeling, just completely immobilizing the plebs, because they fight each other. In the United States, you know, the Republicans are always mad at the Democrats. Everything is the Democrats' fault, and the Democrats are always mad at the Republicans. And they're too busy being mad to have any sort of self-awareness as to what's going on, and realizing, you know, who's really screwing them. It's the Epstein client list. And we've seen multiple Nazi plebs try to frame the conversation as if whatever the current scuffle is, an argument around relay policy, as if this is a right versus left issue. And we've seen the Bitcoin ecosystem really become aligned on two sides and people fighting each other. You've got, you know, the intellectual elite on either side, you know, constantly bickering with each other. And it's really drowning out a lot of interesting stuff that's happening that's kind of important, such as developers getting prosecuted, such as there not being a lot of energy put into, well, there's hardly as much energy being put into building things and shipping things and deploying things, because there's so much energy being spent on fighting each other. It's kind of fascinating to watch. It's fascinating to watch these two camps. And I think it's not a full perspective, but it's because there are a lot of people doing things. And, you know, to be fair, most Bitcoin users just don't give a shit. A lot of Bitcoin users don't even know what's going on. A lot of Bitcoin users don't know who Luke Dash Jr. is. They don't know who Peter Todd is. They don't care. But some of these things could be consequential. If this soft fork is, you know, contentiously implemented, it could create a mess. Could create a very messy situation beyond just it's been socially messy, but it could be messy in the protocol level. Now, I'm not going to speak to that too much, but I think a lot of people are going to have a hard time unless they're just willing to embrace the chaos and just accept it. If they're too set on their ideals of this is how I want the world to look, and I'm not going to be happy unless it looks exactly how I want it to, they're going to be unhappy. Like, you have to live life on life's terms and just embrace it. You got to embrace the things coming at you. I'm not saying that you have to put up with the bullshit. You shouldn't put up with the bullshit at all. But you kind of have to just accept that there's going to be bullshit. It's unavoidable. It's like, and that's a big distinguishment. And I think that's where I'm seeing the difference in attitudes that different people have, because, you know, a lot of people that think the Nazis are retarded, they don't necessarily vehemently support CORE. I wouldn't call them CORE minos. And I think it's okay to be, you know, in this, you know, as the Nazis frame it, a left versus right battle. I think it's fine to be politically homeless. Like, I think most of the people that interact with Bitcoin or historically have been excited about Bitcoin because they have been politically homeless. Like, they don't care about the kayfabe. They realize it's all bullshit. They're like, oh, my interests aren't getting represented. My taxes aren't getting cheaper no matter who's in office. My purchasing power is constantly getting eroded. Everything's getting more expensive. And it's okay to be politically homeless. But yeah, it's been an incredibly wild year. We'll probably do an end of the year recap in December. But, you know, just looking at the political world around us, you know, the world has changed dramatically. Afghanistan, I just can't get over this. Fucking Afghanistan tried to invade Pakistan. How crazy is that? The Taliban is an organized group. After the U.S. government being in there, so the Soviets were in there, they're trying to pummel him, completely failed. U.S. is in there pummeling him for a long time. Eventually gave up. Now these guys tried to invade Pakistan, got totally spanked. I don't know if Pakistan is going to try and fall. I think they know better, but that's where we're at in the world right now. It's so fucking crazy. Pakistan is trying to invade, Afghanistan is trying to invade Pakistan. We're gonna see a lot of really crazy shit like that going forward. It's not over. It's just, in many ways, it's just starting, and it's never been a better time to be a pioneer. You know, and have that mindset. And, you know, maybe the pioneer meme and framing's kind of getting old and cheesy, but it's symbolic of, you know, this individual that really takes responsibility for themselves, that reads Atlas Shrugged and smokes cigarettes, that just focuses on the things that are important to them, doubles down, bets on themselves. Uses their brains. But yeah, I'm going to be interested to see what Rod has in store. Yeah, let me know what you think. I'm curious to hear what our listeners think. You know, drop a boost. Let me know what, you know, your reflections on this past year of the Trump presidency are. Shoot me a message. I'm pretty easy to find. You can find me on Twitter or Telegram or Nostr. Just shoot me a message. Let me know what you think. I'm sure you guys are going to have some pretty good insights. But yeah, thanks for listening to my bit. Now on to Ron.
This is part one of the Bugle's review of Donald Trump's first year in office. Part two featuring Rod's take will be coming out soon. Thank you all for listening. The Fountain Boost will be read on part two.
My job today and my cards are maxed out. My wife is pissed, my life a mess, I feel doubt. Why can't we just print our problems away like the way boomers did back in the day? I look at my kids with a tear in my eye, questioning whether they are destined for a war zone to die. Raising little soldiers to fight and protect this nation while I'm attempting to fight off starvation. I look at my kids with a tear in my eye, questioning whether they are destined for a war zone to die. Raising little soldiers to fight and protect this nation while I'm attempting to fight off starvation. How am I supposed to get around with a car that's repossessed? No food, no car, no dignity, but now I'm stressed. Now my heart is hurt, it's beating out of my chest. Followed chapter 7 after eating at McDonald's is not the best. I remember the days before the world went mad. Back when I trusted the TV, it wasn't sad. I had a dollar in my pocket and Nikes on my feet. I miss the days when I could afford to eat good meat. To be able to afford paying taxes, but now the IRS is on my dick watching my transactions.
I can't afford to live this way. Can't you cut me some slack? Why can't someone else do the hard work to get our country back? Binging Netflix isn't taking the pain away. It feels like the only thing I can do is pray. Lord, please help me afford to pay the state. There is no way I can afford the fees if I pay late. The sheriff is on my doorstep to kick me in the balls. My phone won't stop ringing from debt collector calls. All I wanna do is comply and be left alone. But I can't afford anything and I'm getting kicked out of my home. Sad. I had a dollar in my pocket and Nikes on my feet. I miss the days when I could afford to eat good meat. All I ever asked for is to be able to afford paying taxes. But now the IRS is on my dick watching my transactions. I can't afford to live this way. Can't you cut me some slack? Why can't someone else do the hard work to get our country back? Every night I go to sleep wishing I don't wake up. When we'll wake up in the morning, I can't afford whiskey in my cup. How can I numb out the pain and hide from reality? Why can't I find a way to escape the brutality? It's starting to seem like the only way out is to take action. There is no way to hide from reality and choose distractions. The only way out is forwards, I will not give in. Finding a way to afford to pay taxes is how we win.